Thank you, guys.
Sarah, say something. See, Sarah, sitting there. Now we got to do it all over again.
I'm trying to not make noise.
I know, but you got to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible. Okay, this is going in a blooper reel. And Sarah, welcome to Food Blog Radio, podcast number 47. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Gary. I am excited to speak with our guest today.
Yep.
We ran into her when we were at IFBC just a few weeks ago. Her name is Keita Roberts, and she juggles a couple different blogs that we're going to talk to her about. She actually does more than a couple blogs. She has other things going too, which I'm very excited to speak with her about. Because, you know, I get very excited over a lot of things.
You do.
I do.
Without any prompting. Well, she is amazingly busy.
Yes, she is. Yeah. Very busy. But Pass the Sushi and GirlCarnivore.com are her blogs. And we will have to go check in with her to see what she's doing next.
Right. And where's she located?
I believe she's in Delaware.
Okay. Somewhere back there.
So well, she's on the East Coast. That's all right. I know.
Okay. Well, let's get her on the line.
All right. Sounds great.
Cool.
Hello and welcome back to Food Blog Radio. We are here with the lovely Keita Roberts. Keita, welcome to our show.
Hi guys, I'm really happy to be here today.
Cool, we're happy to have you on the show, Keita. It's been a long time coming, I think, personally.
Yeah. Well, we had scheduled her and we had some technical difficulties with all of our schedules. But we ran into Keita, like we mentioned earlier, at IFBC just a few short weeks ago. And we were fortunate enough to have all of our calendars sync. So here we are.
Yeah, very cool.
But again, welcome. We're going to stop talking so you can talk. Keita, how was your IFBC? Did you enjoy the conference?
IFBC was fantastic. It's my second time coming to that conference. I got to come on behalf of the American Lamb Board this year, and it was wonderful to be able to go on the American Lamb Board tour and see the farm. I thought that was lovely. I always love touring farms. I think that's one of, as a food blogger, our social responsibility to kind of remind people where our food does come from, and I loved leveraging that platform. As far as Sacramento, I went on some beautiful runs through the city of Sacramento and did a few personal tours of some food in Sacramento. And so I had a blast while in Sacramento.
Nice. Now, by run, you mean with your feet or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you're a runner.
Well, I'm a mountain biker.
Okay, right.
But when I don't have my bike, I run.
Oh, okay. Well, very good. Yeah, nice. I walk myself because I can't. My brain bounces.
So does mine.
Yeah. Does that hurt you? Because it drives me crazy.
No, I think that's why I like doing it.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. Well, there's your moment of enlightenment. I'm missing that part. Yeah. Anyway, we digress one more time. Keita, let's take a couple seconds or minutes, if you choose, to kind of wind back to you as a human, maybe perhaps a child, and where you started life and where you've been and what you've done up to this point.
Well, the initial start is a little fuzzy. I'm pretty sure I was purple and bald. So we'll skip ahead a few years. I live in Newark, Delaware, where I live with my two dogs and my two cats. My dogs are 70 pounds, giant and stupid, and I love them to pieces. My two cats are cats. They're fun. They're cats. They hate me. I stay in Newark, Delaware, because my father is here. He's the only real family that I have. And so I've kept my roots in Newark, Delaware, but we all know that I love to travel a lot. And I'm trying to convince him to start moving far, far away so that I can travel from home more often. And I started cooking when I was 17 years old. I was living with my best friend at the time. She was significantly older than me. And her family was from the South, and I had never had, I mean, I was raised, you know, by a single parent, and he worked all the time. And so we had Shake and Bake and Green Giant and Stovetop, like that was a meal. And there's nothing wrong with that, because that fed the family. But I had never seen dinner every night. And this family, it was from the South. It was, you know, a mother and a father that lived with their, the in-laws who were going on married 74 years, and they lived in the in-law suite, and every night my best friend's mother would come home from work and she'd make dinner. And I'm talking like, I thought this was Thanksgiving dinner. Like there was a bird and there were biscuits and there were potatoes and there was probably three types of vegetables. And I gained a solid 10 pounds. I had never eaten like this in my, I didn't know what macaroni and cheese was like until this moment. So my love of food came from that family, and being a part of that family, it was an amazing experience to see somebody make dinner every night. And my best friend made dinner with her mother in the kitchen, and they fed their, you know, the grandparents, and the whole family kind of lived as this, you know, village. It was beautiful and amazing. And God, the food was so good. I remember one Thanksgiving we, you know, had a ham and a turkey and this and that. And 3 hours later we're playing Yahtzee and we're still like slicing off thin pieces of ham. Like who knows where we were putting it, but we were eating, man. I loved it. And so I started in 2009, 2010, I wanted a place to document and personally challenge myself. I was on my own and I was like, all right, I need to challenge myself to cook, you know, cook for one person. And I thought, I followed my friend Peabody's blog. She wasn't my friend yet, but I didn't know what food blogs were. And so I read this hilarious blog called Culinary Concoctions by Peabody. And I just thought it was the wittiest thing I'd ever seen on the internet. And I was like, I can write some recipes and stuff. And so I started. And I had no idea that it was going to be this, you know, transformative experience and this journey that it's come to. Two blogs later, countless trips later, and amazing opportunities and meeting so many awesome people. It's really been like the coolest thing.
What was the first blog?
My first blog is Pass the Sushi. It still exists. I just finished some posting on it today. It has transformed itself through the years. You know, you pick a name like Pass the Sushi, you really have no idea what you're talking about. You later find out that Crayola Crayons produced a color called Pass the Sushi, and you just spend every day patiently waiting for the cease and desist. And it now covers a lot more travel and some things like that, some more personal things that I want to talk about. I no longer consider it just a food blog, but I talk about travel. I talk about resources for other bloggers, and I consider it more of a platform for me to have a voice outside of just, hey, here are some delicious cupcakes. Not that there's anything wrong with delicious cupcakes, because I love those too.
And the second blog?
In 2013, I created Girl Carnivore after a long-winded discussion with myself about like what I really loved about food blogging. And it came down to, you know, a meat grinder I had been given for Valentine's Day, which was the most perfect gift ever. And I really love making my own sausage and barbecuing and big, brassy, bold cuts of like meat that most girls would walk away from. Not most girls, that's rude, I shouldn't generalize. That people on diet shouldn't normally consume. But I just, I love cooking with meat and fire. And so I made Girl Carnivore, and that's kind of been my passion project ever since. I love it.
Well, it's a great title.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And your tagline about something about, you say your tagline, because I don't want to say it.
Because boys aren't the only one that like to play with their meat. I wanted it to be, you know, when you go into blogging now, now that you have business plans and things like this behind your blog before you even launch it, you want to set the tone and let your audience know what they're in for before they even scroll down. And that's why that tagline is very intentional. It's brassy and it's sassy. And I've had calls with sponsors where I'm like, are you, did you read how I talk? Like, I just want to make sure that you know that sometimes there's some language. So it's my little disclaimer right at the very top.
You've transitioned from Pass the Sushi to Girl Carnivore, and you mentioned that you had a business plan, so you had a clear target in doing this. Was this the reason for re-looking at and re-evolving yourself, was because of a good thing or a bad thing? Or, I mean, what was that transition? Because most people don't stop one blog and start another. They may add a couple blogs on. But you had a clear plan, obviously.
Well, and I never stopped Pass the Sushi. Pass the Sushi continues on. I just branched out. I knew that what I wanted wasn't going to fit in the wheelhouse of Pass the Sushi.
Okay.
And I didn't like the box that I had been put in. I found out that after a few years of blogging, especially, like I said, before these, you know, before monetization of blogs was really a big thing and anybody could do it. You know, when I started, there was the top 10 food bloggers, and everybody idolized those 10 people. And now there's 4 million food bloggers. And, you know, and that's great. I love that we have a platform that everybody can speak on. But I knew, I had felt that maybe I was compromising some of my own opinion and flavor and personality, because I was trying to be the, you know, the blogger that produced content 5 times a week and did all the things and pinned all the things and was in all the groups and whatnot. And I realized that that works for some people, but that's not my playground. And so I picked up and I went to my own sandbox and I started playing in it because it's, I don't think we're a one size fit all community. And I love that we have so many opportunities, but I feel like we can really tax ourselves and stretch ourselves too thin when we try to be all things to all people instead of really honing in on that thing that just drives us.
Right. Well, and that's a great point. I mean, I'm very, very impressed with how you've approached this. I mean, you went into it with a clear thought. Your blog looks fabulous. I mean, I just love looking at your content that you have on there, the layout and everything. I mean, I really think there was a lot of insight and depth into that. So kudos and bravo to you. I think that's really, really well. And my sentiments mirror yours exactly, is that you can't be everything. And you just got to follow and be true to yourself. So very
and
nice.
I think your blog does reflect that. I think when you look at it, like Gary was talking about the layout and everything, you can tell you are spunky and full of life, and it's reflected right there on the page. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can, you know, I there's nothing wrong with, like, I can wear the Sunday dress and, you know, sit in church and do all that too. But at the end of the day, your true colors shine through, and they shine strongest when you're comfortable with who you are and what you are. And I just find that it's easier for me to produce content for a website that's reflective of me as opposed to trying to, like, fill out a form. And so I really love Girl Carnivore is my baby. Mm-hmm. I just love meat. Well, quote of the day.
Yeah, definitely. Cha-ching. Listen, what you are the solo entrepreneur behind this, correct? I mean, you're doing the recipes, you're doing the cooking, you're doing the photography, you're doing the social media. And now, is this a full-time gig for you?
So I recently did transition. I managed a comic book store. I've managed that comic book store since I was 17 years old. I just transitioned out of it, and now freelance writing and photography, and that includes my blogging, is my full-time job. I have hired my first VA. He's amazing. I love him. Holy crap, it's the best money I've ever spent, because I don't have to manage Facebook anymore, and, you know, that's part of being a good manager is realizing what you do and don't love to do and finding somebody who loves to do it and letting them do it, because I hate Facebook. Blogging is, you know, a large part of my freelance career, but I do make sure to diversify my content in my sources as often as possible, because I think we have a bigger voice than just our blogs. And it's really awesome that we can leverage that social media and that platform to get bigger, better contracts.
Well, let's talk about the things that you diversify with just a little bit. You mentioned photography. Were you a photographer before you started blogging?
Yes. So long story, if you had asked 6-year-old naive little me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would flip through those magical National Geographic books and I would look at those pictures and dream of becoming a National Geographic photographer. And I did several school reports on National Geographic photographers and weird animals that most kids had never heard of. And I was that nerd. yay. And then, you know, a few years go by, I taught black and white film photography in high school. Our school didn't have a budget to maintain that, that after we left, but we duct taped a window shut. We were in a tiny little office and we ran an entire black and white film processing lab out of it. Probably about 6 or 7 kids. It was awesome. We loved it. We had at the time they were old. And this is before DSLRs were popular, but they weren't like everybody had one, and let alone mirrorless. You know, it was an old film camera, and I mean, these things were ancient. And we ran a black and white film lab. And then, you know, I was 17 years old. I was managing 2 jobs and paying the bills and living on my own, shortly thereafter living with my best friend. And, you know, you kind of put away all those fanciful childhood dreams and you're like, oh, well, photography, that's a hobby. And then years went on and I just kept taking photos, and I just really had that passion for photography, and it would be more than taking a photo of a cupcake. It, in my opinion, it was how to make that cupcake look sexy. Or I recall this one mountain biking ride where I was 18 miles into my mountain biking ride, and I was thinking about how to make a cheeseburger look like a Playboy model on a beach. And I was going to lay like a little leather bikini around behind it and this and that. And so that you knew if you looked at this burger, it was clearly a little Playboy model. And I just was laughing out loud at how ridiculous this thought was. Like, who thinks like that? I was probably really hungry and a little thirsty. It was very hot out. And so to me, the photography is so much more than snapping a quick photo of dinner and putting it on my blog. I love constructing the story behind the scene and showing off what that meal really is or what that ingredient is or telling the story behind that. And so photography is a huge aspect of my life right now. It's actually become the thing that fuels everything.
So your photography is phenomenal. I mean, it is really, really good and drool worthy. What are some tips that you would share with people that are looking to produce photography as good as yours?
Take a photo every day. Take a photo every single day. You're going to take 10,000 photos before you figure out what a great photo is, but never stop taking photos if you really love doing it, because you're going to get better and you're going to look back and you're going to see your photo from 2 years ago and you're going to go, man, I've gotten good. Read the manual. As boring as that sounds, nobody reads the manual, and learning your tool is the difference between a handyman and a contractor. It's the difference between being able to do something and knowing how to do something. So really investing the time to learn the tool. I think that's, you know, paramount. I talk about bonding with my camera. I like treat it like a newborn baby. I'm going to spend 3 weeks with it, just learning it and what every single button does and what every single button shouldn't do, and really learning in and out of it so that I can better control everything I want that camera to do when I need it to do it. And then obviously the basics. Big window, natural light. Guys, don't invest money in fake lights and little light boxes for $30 on Amazon. I never use them. Stupid. Don't do it.
What kind of camera do you use?
I have the Nikon D610 at the moment. And the reason I went with the D610 is that its picture size is a little bit smaller, thus producing a faster camera. I have photographed mountain bike races, so I need a faster camera. The 750, the 700, the 810 are gorgeous cameras. And I will eventually have one too, but I needed a faster camera at the time for what I do.
Cool. Now, a lot of people are just using their phones these days because the cameras are getting better and better and better. What kind of tips do you have for them?
I would say the same exact thing. There's, you know, make sure that you have a clean, first of all, make sure you, if you're going to only use your phone, make sure it's a good one. There's so many choices right now. Make sure that you buy the top quality, you know, it doesn't have to be the biggest, you know, file, but size on your camera, but make sure it's a really good camera. You want a camera that has really good low light options, one that maybe even has the ability to change the ISO settings, things like that. I think your biggest thing is always going to be finding good light and standing in front of it.
And not blocking it. Because that's what you do with the phone. Yeah, the phone, you got to get so close. I find that very frustrating, but yeah, it's a great tip. Let's segue into a big project you have coming up, and then we'll come back to blogging again. But you are involved in a food photography course, class.
Workshops.
Workshop. That's the word I wanted. Why don't you tell us about that, Keita?
Yeah. So last year, I took my friend Allie. I talked to my friend Allie of Allie's Kitchen, who I believe you guys interviewed a few months ago. I talked her into going to Morocco with me. And while we were on a caravan through the desert at one point, I was telling her I had this idea of teaching these workshops. I wanted to teach pop-up workshops all over the country to food photographers because I love teaching. And I was talking to Allie. Like, if you guys know Allie and if you don't know Allie, follow Allie. She's amazing. She's like the most positive, radiating, like joy bally, gushy woman in the whole wide world.
She is. She's got this beautiful southern accent to go with it. I just adore her.
And let me just tell you, that gave her so much slack in Morocco, because we would be in these crazy crowded little streets and she'd be wanting to snap a photo and people would be looking at her like she was crazy because she's this crazy American woman in Morocco in these tight little streets. And she would just be all, hello. And people would just be like, well, aren't you adorable? It's like, I can't get away with what she's getting away with. My God.
She worked it.
She totally worked it. She knew what she was doing. Nice. And she would have like these Moroccan men like posing and stuff. I was like, oh my God. So a few weeks later, she and I, after a Morocco trip, you know, she called me and we really started to lay the foundation of what this photography workshop would be. And I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, this woman listened to me and believes in me. So we laid out a 3.5-day workshop in her home near Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And we invited 5 women to come stay with us. And we did a 3.5-day photo workshop. We added a day in South Carolina to explore the gardens and things like that. But our goal is a two-day workshop, really intensive hands-on. And what I wanted is I'm best at learning when I can put my hands on something. I can read 1,000 manuals and read that, read the instruction booklet. But unless I actually sit and push all of the buttons, I don't learn. And so I think it's valuable to have that hands-on learning experience with somebody who knows the camera as well and maybe a little bit better than you do to really walk you through what all of those buttons are. And I think by having somebody there with you, you become a little less afraid to push the buttons or change the settings and see what they do. And so we spent 2 days. We really worked on it. We would have food prepared, and then we'd style the food, and we'd really let everybody like take a minute to restyle the food in their flavor, because not everybody has the same look and nobody should have the same look. And so like we'd let them restyle their shoot so that it was signature, like it fit their brand. And then we worked with them until they got the shot. And the moment, I mean, I remember like the very moment that one of my girls got the shot, like she knew it and she just looked up at me and I was like, yeah, that's what this is about. Like she was like, I get it now. And she had a good photography before. She'd had training in photography before, but it was that hands-on working through the problem and problem-solving together to really put the puzzle pieces together to make it work. And that's when I realized, like, we're onto something. This is good. This is so good. So I'm working on the second one now. It's going to be in Philadelphia. Allie's not going to be able to attend. She had a conflict of schedule come up, which is a shame because she just makes me happy. But it's still going to be 2.5 days, super intensive, hands-on workshop. I'm going to bring food in and take care of all of that. And so if you're looking to hone your food skills, I would say come, because I like to think that I'm fun and that you're going to learn something. But I actually know that you're going to learn something. And as a photographer myself, I go to 3 or 4 workshops a year outside of my comfort zone to push myself. And I think it's an investment in myself. And I encourage people to invest in their, if they really want it, you know, to invest in themselves and to commit to something like this. If it's not mine, there's so many other great photography workshops out right now that really just pick one and learn, because you'll learn more in 2 days with somebody teaching you than you will learn in hours of YouTube classes.
Now, do you have dates for that yet?
I'm trying to narrow down. I just asked on Facebook today. So if the audience wants to chime in, I'm single and not tied down to anything and I don't have any children. So I'm like, well, I can go any day of the week. But I asked today if weekends or weekdays are better. So it's going to be between the 1st and probably the 9th of November. I just need to nail down if it's that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or if it's that Saturday, Sunday sort of thing.
Very good.
And that's how exciting. How do they find out more details?
They can go to foodiepopups.com and sign up for my email list. I'm going to be updating the Foodie Pop-Ups website with the details as soon as I nail down those dates. And I send out some content. I send out great content quarterly on that email list anyway, just my personal behind-the-scenes thoughts, things I don't write down necessarily on my other blogs, because I don't feel that food bloggers, the audience for a food blog that's coming for cupcakes or travel photos, really wants the behind the scenes talk, tech talk that food photography is. But so I really try to give that content and give really, really valuable content and insight to that. Plus, it's also a really safe environment. Everything I do, I try to, like, you don't have to be a superstar or a rock star, or you can be an intro level photographer. You can bring your iPhone. We're going to go over photography for everybody. You don't have to already be at a caliber. And that's one thing that I think people they talk themselves out of. I know I used to do it. I'd be like, oh, I'm not good enough to attend this class. That's stupid. Like, if you want to learn something, show up. Just show up. I'm super excited for it. Yeah. So especially, like the first one, I was nervous. I was like, oh God, who am I to teach photography? Like, oh, I'm just a girl with a camera. And then I did it. And now I'm kind of like, let's do this. This is going to be awesome. And I, my goal is to be able to teach them. I really want to keep the pop-up idea in mind and teach them across the country. And so I'm laying the foundation of across the country. That being said, I have people that hold out and they're like, oh, I'm just going to wait for you to come to my neck of the woods. Well, I don't know when that's going to be necessarily. So, you know, keep that in mind.
Now, what if you had a bunch of people who lived in one area get together and say, hey, Kita, we want you to come visit us here in, oh, I don't know, say Los Angeles, and come out for 2 days. I mean, are you open to that too?
That would make my job so much easier. Two, I have a personal chef in Los Angeles that's totally willing to help out if we do want to make one happen in Los Angeles. Just saying.
I'm just throwing that out there.
I mean, I also have, I've had some people in Vegas say it too. So if people want to band together, and you know, if you get a team of 5 or 6 people, I can expand it there. My classes will never be more than 10 people, because I think if you get too many people, you can't give enough value. So I will never do more than 10 people. Honestly, my comfort is 8. I think 8 is like a sweet spot that everybody gets that one-on-one time.
So there you go. For those of you out there who are listening and have a group of bloggers or friends or something across the country, would you be willing to go to Canada and things like that too?
This girl travels.
Okay, well, this girl travels. So, okay, internationally, because we have people who have groups in Dubai and all over the place. So, those of you who, you know who you are, you know who you are. If you're interested in getting Kita to come to you, she will be giving all her contact information at the end of our podcast. And hey, why not, right?
Let's go back to blogging for a minute. You have worked with a large assortment of brands and such. And the number one question that all food bloggers have is, how do you get together with a brand? How do you make that happen? How do you get the big bucks from them? And I know there's no one answer. There's no easy answer, but tell us about your steps and how you went about getting where you are today.
So exactly. That is a tricky and it's a slippery slope. And you know what I love about it is everybody thinks it's about numbers. Everybody thinks it's about, you got to be a powerhouse blogger. And I don't believe in that. And I've never believed in that. There was a time when, Past the Sushi had a bajillion page views and Pinterest was amazing and whatnot. And then I had Girl Carnivore, and Girl Carnivore is tiny, but she is mighty. The, you know, meat is not pinnable. It's not viral content. Unless I wrapped everything in bacon, I'm never going to break the internet in the way that, you know, a single cupcake can. But there's power there, because I really, you know, once you figure out what your niche is, what your thing is, you now have a raving fan and you have a target demographic, and that makes you insanely valuable to the right brands. And so I think this comes back to when you start out and things are like trickling in and you don't really know what you're doing, you're reaching for anything and everything, and you'll work with this person and you'll work for that person and you'll take a product for review because it's kind of awesome. And I could totally have a flea market right now, like a billion unopened boxes, and it's probably half of them versions of slow cookers. Right? There was a moment when I was like, please don't send me another slow cooker. I got this. And then you find out as you transition that there's brands that align with your audience and there's value in that. And so I think when you start to really value the audience and build something for them, you're going to find that things just kind of domino into place. So I would suggest everybody really look at who they're writing their blog for. And I don't mean that in the grand scheme of things. I'm not saying that you can't have cupcakes and dinners and family meals and whatnot. You can, but that probably means that your target is an individual. Is she a working mom who has 3 kids and is really busting her butt to get dinner on the table and on Sundays wants to bake a cake and like give her family real food? Well, now you have your audience. You have your person. You have that singular individual that you're writing this blog for, and every day you're this is what you're doing it for. It's not about the 15,000 likes on Facebook. It's about that one person that comes back for every recipe. And then in that you have the power to your brands. So you can, you know, see who your person is, who your individual is. And now you can start to pick out those brands that they really are aligned with. Full disclosure, I work with a grilling company. And, you know, I've had people come up to me and say, well, why not a more high-end grilling company? Well, you're right. I could pursue higher-end grilling companies. And I would love to. Like, my backyard has 7 grills. I want to try. Well, it has 12 grills. I want to try them all. I would love high-end grills. But the reality is my consumer probably is starting out and can probably go to a Lowe's or a Home Depot and buy the beginner grill. So why wouldn't I give them product reviews on something that's tangible for them? I'm giving them top quality content. And because of that, I've been able to form some fantastic, you know, ambassador programs with some great brands that I really value working with. Instead of doing these one-off posts here and there for a free pot and a couple $100 here, this and that, that don't really bring anybody any value. Above all things, I put relationship. And that you can ask my best friends at my dining room table tonight. You can ask my core business model. And I've always valued relationship over everything else, because I think if you put that first, the content you produce and the quality you're going to get out of it is going to trump everything else.
Great tips.
Don't know if that answered your question, but it's worked for me.
Yeah. Excellent advice.
Yeah. I mean, it's solid advice. I think you did answer the question, because there is no single one way to approach a brand to get them to support you or sponsor you or work with you. But it all falls back to what you talked about right there in the content you deliver and the relationships that you build. So bravo.
And treating every PR person, every single individual in this, I mean, at the end of the day, like, it's so easy to get frustrated and caught up and clickbait. And there's 1,000 emails every day, and it's to whom this may concern. And it's so generic, but there was a person that wrote that email. So I try to reply with honest respect back to every single individual. And I say, like, thank you so much for contacting me for the 5th day in a row about your vegetarian burgers. I value that, but I cannot write about that. And there's nothing wrong with your vegetarian burgers. They're probably delicious. My audience would maim me. Mm-hmm. Like, I really try to be authentic. And when I can't work with a brand because they don't align with me, I actually send back a reply with 3 bloggers that I honestly feel work really well with that brand. And I'll say, you know what? This brand doesn't align with me. Thank you so much for thinking of me, but I highly recommend X, Y, and Z to you. And whether or not they listen, I don't know. I've had some people reply with, thank you so much. And I've had crickets. But you know what? My thought is, at least I've given them back something valuable for their time.
It's brilliant. It shows that you actually read the email, and responded professionally to the email, as opposed to what I do is usually just ignore it.
delete.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well.
But I would love to know, Keto, where, if anyone else has any questions or would like to follow you as well, where can they find you? All over the internet.
All over the internet. Like Kardashian, except with, you know, more coverage. I am at I am at Pass the Sushi on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, as well as Instagram. I'm also at Girl Carnivore if you want those meat adventures. Pinterest is all under Pass the Sushi. I apologize. Mainly because I'm lazy and I don't want 2 Pinterest accounts. But Girl Carnivore has her own Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram account. Any follow-up questions, anything like that, I get a ton of questions every day in my Facebook Messenger and my email. So please feel free to follow up. And also, please, if you were curious at all about the Foodie Pop-Up Workshops, please check out that website as well, because I'm really excited about that project.
Very cool.
Those are great.
Now, I want to make it clear to everybody listening that panting in the background is not me, but Keto has a couple wonderful dogs with her right now. And because Keto's beautiful and I would typically pant. So, but Keto, you have been a delight. Thank you so much. Your dogs have been entertaining. That has been fun. Yeah, that's, I think it's very cool.
I got to test a product the other day and I'm changing. I used to have everything delivered to my comic shop because it was easy and somebody was always there. And if you have a business, get all of your products delivered to a business because they treat businesses better than houses. But I've had to start changing everything to my front door, and I have to leave notes like, please just drop this box and run, because my dogs are really annoying. It's not that they're mean, they're just annoying.
Sounds so much like mine.
Yep. So I've seen the UPS man toss it and go.
Yeah. Very cool. Okay. Well, listen, thank you so much for being on Food Blog Radio. You've been an awesome guest and delivered some great content. I really, really appreciate it. And I wish you the best of luck in all your endeavors with Girl Carnivore, because it sounds like you're going places, kiddo.
That's right. I agree.
Cool.
Thanks, Keita.
All right. Take care.
All right. We'll talk again soon.
Let's do that goodbye again, because it's all jumbled up. Okay, Keita, you take care.
Thank you, guys.
Sarah, say something. See, Sarah, sitting there. Now we got to do it all over again.
I'm trying to not make noise.
I know, but you got to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible. Okay, this is going in a blooper reel. Oh, see the conditions I have to work under, Keita.
Oh,
unbelievable.
That was a fun conversation with a good time.
It was. And she's adorable. And like we said during the podcast, there wasn't enough time during IFBC to chat with her. So now we got a good 30-something minutes in, and it's a pleasure to know her. And I look forward to interacting with her more in the future if possible. I think she's going to be going places.
I agree. And I love that she's got all kinds of different things happening between both blogs and her foodie pop-ups and things. It's going to be great fun to watch her grow.
Yeah. Must be nice to be young and energetic.
I wouldn't know.
Either would I. All right. Well, we got to get out of here. You guys can find us, as always, on foodblogradio.com. We do hope you subscribe to our email list. Get over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast there. Leave a comment, some love. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on Blueberry, I think it is. You can find us on Facebook at Food Blog Radio. You can find us on Twitter at Food Blog Radio.
We're everywhere.
And yeah, so join us, because otherwise we'll keep talking and talking and talking, trying to get you to join us.
Okay.
All right.
All right, everyone. We'll see you again next time with another great guest. Thanks so much, Gary.
Yeah. Take care, sir. Bye-bye, everybody. Be good to your heart.